I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest this week, but it is a regular. Sports Media Watch editor and founder, John Lewis, one of the exceptional voices in this space. He's been on this podcast many times, both as a solo act as well as with Austin Karp and others. And we bring him today as a solo act. John Lewis, welcome back.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start up. We got a lot to talk about. Let's start up with viewership, because literally as we're taping this on January 30th, the AFC Championship viewership dropped down. We'll get to the NFC in a second. So Chiefs Ravens averages 55.473 million viewers, beats the previous record of 54 and change for Jet Steelers in 2011. John, this just continues an incredible run in the postseason for the NFL. It continues an incredible run in the postseason anytime the Chiefs air. And you probably will get to this in your answer, but there's no doubt that there is a Taylor Swift factor here, and that while she's certainly not responsible for AFC Championship viewership, the game itself is the game itself. I think it's very clear she amplifies that viewership number. So when that came out today, how'd you see it?
Well, I'm not sure how much I agree that there was that big of a Taylor Swift effect. I mean, remember, it was not the most watched game of the day. That was the Lions 49ers in the later window. I do think obviously there's probably some impact there, but I don't see a universe, given the numbers we've seen for the NFL this postseason, where another matchup would have been much lower. I mean, maybe Bills Ravens would have been 52, 53 million. Now, maybe it wouldn't have been quite the record beating Jet Steelers in 2011. I think with these numbers, you know, we got to consider obviously the out of home impact, I think. So I want to be clear that out of home viewing is not, you know, falsely inflating NFL viewership. The NFL is doing great. But when we talk about these records, I mean, these are really skewed records. I mean, this is like wind-aided versus non-wind-aided or something.
The Olympics,
right?
It's funny. Yeah, you're right. I agree.
And obviously, we know this was not more watched than Jet Steelers in 2011. It wasn't even the most watched, if we're really being honest, of Patrick Mahomes' career in the AFC, because Patriots Chiefs in 2019 was 53.9 million without out-of-home viewing. So, by the way, out-of-home viewing was being tracked back then, just not included in the numbers. So maybe at some point I might see what that 2019 number really was with out-of-home included. But long story short, great, great number, excellent number, incredible that the NFL can get 55 million viewers, but all of these records are in name only.
All right, so let me counter on a couple things. One, I disagree with you on Taylor Swift. I do think there's casual fans who are watching or at least checking out the broadcast who would never watch an NFL game because of her. Even earlier in the year, NBC Peacock put out a number that they attributed to her because they were tracking females between 18 and 35, which were way up. But I don't want to make this a Taylor Swift conversation. But the thing that's sort of interesting to me about what you just said, John, everything you said about out-of-home network is correct. I do think we can fairly make the comparison between this year and last year, because metrics are the same. And based on that, these championship games soared over last year. Like that's all apples to apples as opposed to apples to oranges. And it does show more interest in the NFL in 2023 versus 2022.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So AFC title game was up 17% in viewership from 49ers Eagles in the same window last year. That was a blowout, of course, but also up 4% from Bengals Chiefs in the late window. So that's kind of amazing. Obviously, the Lions 49ers game was up as well. The NFL's had a great year. There's been real growth. I think, obviously, it would have been much preferable to get the Lions in the Super Bowl. I mean, we know with the NFL, it's not like baseball where you get the Diamondbacks and the Rangers and you're like, oh no, any matchup is going to do well in the Super Bowl. But, you know, obviously the NFL was, this is kind of like 03 in baseball where they ended up with the Marlins and the Yankees. And it's like, well, you got the Yankees in the World Series, but boy, it would have been nice to get Red Sox Cubs, wouldn't it? And you kind of miss out on that great storyline that would have been Detroit getting there. And you know, the other aspect is we've seen KC versus San Francisco pretty recently back in 2020. So, you know, it was a great game, but it wasn't the most memorable. So certainly it would have been nice to get a better matchup on paper, but everything is looking up for this league right now. It's in the only negative thing I can think of from a ratings perspective that's happened is the Lions losing short of the big game. Everything else has worked out exactly as the league would have wanted.
So that's interesting to me. So, like, I think both of us know and agree that the Chiefs are a great viewership team. They're always going to draw viewers. The NFL markets itself around quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes is, I think, is the best quarterback in the history of the league, quite frankly, other than Tom Brady. And if you want to say he's the best, I'm not sure I'm going to argue with you. So that gets to the Lions-Niners, John. Do you think that viewership, listen, it's in the great programming window in terms of 6:30. It's the primetime game. We just talked about how the NFL is hot. But do you attribute like that massive number more to the Lions and the Niners? Because that's interesting to me.
Well, I would attribute it most of anything to the window, as you mentioned. But I think the Lions are the driving force. The 49ers are, you know, they played in a great game the previous week that did really great numbers against Green Bay. But I think the Packers were the driving force behind that.
But the Packers are, by the way, I should just let the audience know, what was that exact number? Was that for the Lions-Niners? 56 million?
56.32 million.
Okay, right. And I'll sort of give back to you. But the Packers, obviously, like the Cowboys and like the Chiefs, these are historically great viewership teams.
Yeah, but, you know, they're also, you know, they got a new quarterback people don't know yet named Jordan Love. I mean, obviously the Packers are the Packers, but the fact that Green Bay was, in my view, the driving force, you know, they just have kind of more of an underdog story because they weren't supposed to be in the playoffs. I think they were the first 7 seed to win a game. And that aspect with the Lions as well, I think, is enticing to people. You know, it's not NCAA tournament-like, but it's something you don't always get in the NFL. And that's, you know, true underdogs.
The last year's Super Bowl is the most watched Super Bowl on record. When they had an initial number that came out, Nielsen then said we coded some stuff wrong and put a new number out. And the new number, 115.1 million for the Chiefs-Eagles, surpassed the prior record of 114.4 million for Patriots-Seahawks on NBC in 2015. John, I would say, I know how you feel about the Niners, but I would say if this game is close, just given the momentum of the NFL season, again, we probably disagree a little bit on this, given the Taylor Swift factor, at least in my opinion, I think this Super Bowl, if it's close in the fourth quarter, will set a new viewership record. How do you see it?
I think, yeah, probably. I mean, really, the matchup doesn't even matter. Anything short of Jaguars-Panthers was going to get a record, I think, this year. I would note, the real record for a Super Bowl, if we're being totally real, is Patriots-Falcons in 17, because there was out-of-home viewing being tracked then. It just wasn't included in the Nielsen official numbers. So the official number for that Patriots-Falcons game was 111 million, but if you include the out-of-home viewing, it was 124 million, and that is at least as far as all of the Nielsen measures that were being taken at the time, the most watched on record. But obviously, technically, last year's was the record. I think you'll see that number probably surpassed. I mean, I don't know. Last year was a really good matchup. You'd much prefer Philadelphia in there to San Francisco. The Swift factor, it will probably, I mean, here's the thing about the Taylor
Swift. I think
it's
a bigger, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's a bigger factor to me in the Super Bowl, maybe than any other game, just because it is the Super Bowl, right?
Well, it's less of a factor in the Super Bowl to me than in any other game. There's always celebrities in the Super Bowl, and usually they're not sitting in the stands watching, they're performing. And to me, Beyonce performing, Michael Jackson performing, Prince performing, the Super Bowl's always had that. And that's so much bigger than, hey, look, Taylor Swift's sitting there watching the game. So to me, I think the Super Bowl factor already includes a significant celebrity fan base in a lot of these past years. Now, you know, look, the fact is Usher is not really the highest profile performer. So maybe Taylor Swift will make up for that in terms of her presence, but there's always, always a big celebrity factor, a big music factor. It's one of the, it's the biggest night in music. It's bigger than the Grammys. So I don't really think it'll, I don't anticipate that being a significant factor.
All right, again, we're going to disagree on this, and that's fine. Never again has there been a celebrity who is dating the star tight end of a Super Bowl team. So I think it's going to pop, but you know, we'll have you back in a couple of weeks, and we'll see. I want to get to Greg Olson. If you read or subscribe to The Athletic, you saw a long piece by me that was published on Monday about Greg Olson. Where he sits right now in terms of what's going to happen heading forward, Tom Brady, the impact of him coming in. My thesis on that piece, after talking to a lot of people in and outside of Fox, is that if I were Olson or Olson's agent, I would play the long game. I would stick at Fox. I would work on the number two team with Joe Davis and Pam Oliver. I would obviously ask for a big raise to do that from what a normal number two gets. And I would wait it out because I don't think Tom Brady is long for a broadcasting job. He has a 10-year contract. I don't see him coming close to fulfilling that. Again, very easy for me to say. And Greg Olson obviously is a number one analyst and deserves all the praise he gets. John, you're someone again. You watch all these games. You've watched all this. How do you sort of see the Greg Olson, Tom Brady thing heading forward?
Well, I think you'd be crazy if you're Fox not to keep Greg Olson on that number one team. You spent all that time investing in him while he was still a player to develop his talent. And he has come through. He has lived up to those expectations. This is like when you grow homegrown talent. I can't think of any really good examples. I'll just say like Austin Reeves or something with the Lakers. And he turns out to be a good player, a serviceable player. And then you just trade him for the big name. The reality is that Olsen, one, is a lot better at his job than Austin Reeves is at his. No offense to Austin. I know that comparison wasn't the greatest. But the reality is, you know, he was able to replace Troy Aikman more than adequately. They had high hopes for him, and he has lived up to all of those hopes. So I don't see any reason why you would demote him in favor of a guy named Tom Brady, who has never done it, who might not be good at it. And at the very least, having Olson there allows you to protect Brady a little bit in case he is a little shaky to start.
Do you... I don't think this is going to happen at all. But the only place where I feel like perhaps there could be a change would be Amazon, only because Kirk Herbstreit may wake up one day and be like, you know what, I am tired of this travel, and I'm just going to stick to college, which is my longtime strength and longtime passion. But otherwise, like, there's not – all the spots are taken, you know? Like, they're all under contract. And you've written about this as long as I have. Networks don't make random moves when it comes to their A-team.
Well, except for ESPN with the NBA, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah,
that's next. John, don't jump the topics. That's next topic.
Right. But look, I think Herbstreit is obviously overworked. I mean, he'll never admit that because it's kind of gauche, given all the money he makes, to complain about the travel. But I mean, his travel is probably not even healthy for someone to be doing at the level that he's doing it. I think he did a game day in like South Carolina and a game in Oregon the same day or something like that this year. It would make sense for him to step back from one of those jobs. And Olson obviously would be a great fit for any position. It would have to be someone other than Al, I think. I don't think you're going to start Olson in the total.
Although Al signed for next year, and Al's not walking, you know. That's the thing with our Herbstreit too. Usually you don't walk away, John, from millions of bucks. Al's not going anywhere next year.
Yeah, well, maybe beyond next year. I mean, who knows how this works in terms of next season for Olson, but That would be a good spot. Amazon, certainly. And Amazon's going to get better games. Amazon's going to get a playoff game. They're going to get a Christmas game.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure the next Christmas is a Thursday for the NFL in a couple of years. I'm sure Amazon's getting a game that night and probably a playoff game next year. So that's going to become a bigger and bigger package as time goes on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's get to the NBA, as you brought up. The irony of Doc Rivers taking the Bucks job is, of course, that ESPN put out there that the reason or one of the reasons they were letting go of Jeff Van Gundy, right, was that because they were worried, or they've historically been worried about him taking a coaching job. Having did a little reporting on this, there's no question ESPN was blindsided by this and not happy at all. You know, you invest in Doc, you pay him a lot of money, and if nothing else, you think you're going to get the year out of him, especially after all the promotion and marketing that you did for the three-person booth between Mike Breen, Doc Rivers, and Doris Burke. Now Doc goes to the Bucks, and you now, as ESPN management, have to make a decision. Do you stick with Mike Breen and Doris Burke as a two-person team, which in many ways was sort of the historical template prior to the three-person NBA booth? Or do you bring in J.J. Redick or Richard Jefferson? Seems like they favor J.J. Redick potentially for that spot, and you make it a three-person team for the NBA Finals. I actually think that ESPN is in a good position here because I don't think there's a bad solution to this problem. Doris and Mike will do a great job. Doris, Mike, and J.J. Redick would do a great job. I personally, John, and I'm going a little long here because I want you to comment on this, if I was ESPN, I would actually go outside the box, and I would ask somebody who loses in the postseason, say somebody like Steve Kerr or LeBron, to come in and be a third analyst and to make the NBA Finals like really interesting and unique by bringing in somebody unexpected that you never would have expected to do the broadcast. I don't expect them to do this, but that's how I would do it. How do you see all this?
Well, I definitely, well, why not Doc Rivers in that scenario? You know, it's been a lot of second round exits. You would think it might be a circumstance where he's available. Look, I think the reality is it obviously didn't work out. ESPN made a kind of a ridiculous move to get rid of their long-term analysts. You don't hire Doc. I mean, Doc Rivers has spent five total seasons in broadcasting, five over the course of 25 years. He did 3 years with Turner, left for the Magic. And, you know, his previous season with ESPN and ABC, he wasn't even there the whole year. He started the season in Orlando, got fired, and before the season was over, he had taken the Celtics job. And that was just in 1 year working for them with Al Michaels a million years ago. So, you know, hey, you get what you kind of are paying for. And ESPN had to know that Doc would take the first opportunity to go back into coaching. As far as the future goes, I'd go with Jefferson over Redick. One of the things that I would say is when Doc and Doris were there together, one, they didn't have any chemistry at all. They didn't have any chemistry. They didn't have time to build chemistry, but they didn't have any chemistry. Doc being the lead analyst, really the A guy who had done the finals before, kind of dominated the conversations, and Doris was maybe getting in some words edgewise. J.J. Redick is a podcaster. You bring him on, he's going to be dominating the conversation too. And I don't think he's earned that position the way that Doc Rivers did. I mean, if you want to say that one season 20 years ago for ABC and ESPN is earning it. I think Jefferson is someone who is more of a supplementary analyst. He doesn't take over the game. If you've heard him work with Sarah Kustok before, he's the secondary guy there. He doesn't overwhelm. And I think for Doris in particular, if she's going to be there, she needs to be the lead of those two analysts.
Does it, you know, I think one of the interesting questions is, does it even matter? Like, would anything change for viewers if it's just Mike Breen and Doris Burke? I don't think the viewership obviously would change at all. No. And they have chemistry. You know, they've worked together for a long time and they like each other. Again, I don't know what ESPN's going to do, and that's a, you know, I don't think it's going to get to the Petaro Magnus level. It's like a Dave Roberts, Norby Williamson-ish level kind of decision. But they may not even have to make a decision, John. You know what I mean? Like, they, yeah. I don't think if you're an NBA fan, I don't whether you like Mike Breen or Doris Burke or not, you can't say that they're not. They don't have the requisite experience to do that job. You know what I'm saying? Functionally. So in some ways, you don't even have to make a move if you don't want to.
I think the only consideration is, you know, the idea that they don't have anyone who played or coached professionally.
Yeah, it's a good point. Really good point.
And, you know, I mean, obviously Doris didn't have an opportunity to play professionally. There was no WNBA at that time. But, you know, I don't even know if her college career would have merited a pro career.
She's a very good player at Providence. I don't know if she was good enough to be a WNBA player, though.
Right. So, you know, that to me, I can't think of really any parallels in the history of the NBA on TV. I mean, where there's been nobody in the booth who played or coached professionally. So that might be something that you think about. Ultimately, who, you know, how many people really care about that? I don't know. I do think that this is a great opportunity for, you know, Doris to play to her strengths. She's a very strong analyst. She breaks down the game really well. The only flaws that I would say that I've seen in terms of her work would be maybe a little bit too takey at times in terms of some of the ways she describes things can almost seem a little podcasty themselves. That to me, I think when you're working with someone like Mike Breen, that maybe eventually in this two-person booth will kind of fade over time. And certainly more than anything, the quality of the games will determine the quality of the analysis. As we saw on Saturday, a great game, and it was a great broadcast too.
The last one for me is, you know, the NBA media rights are coming up. And unquestionably, the NBA, I think, if they don't have a direct hand, they have an indirect hand in terms of who they want to be their signature broadcasters, particularly for the finals. If you could get into the head of the NBA broadcasting apparatus, those people, Adam Silver, et cetera, do you think, my sense is maybe they would want a former player or a former coach on that broadcast as a sort of a link to the league. I don't particularly think they love Van Gundy because he's very critical of the refs, et cetera. But, you know, how do I sort of phrase this? Like, it's a weird thing. Like, no, the leagues don't hire the broadcasters, but the broadcasters know that they're not hiring somebody who the leagues wouldn't approve. So in that sense, John, do you think if you're Adam Silver and company, like, do you want a coach or a player on that broadcast because it's such a signature property for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would. Absolutely. You know, I also think, you know, it's been a long time since there's been a two-person booth on the NBA. It's kind of weird. Yeah. With football, it's nothing but two-person booths. So the idea of Olsen and Brady in a three-man booth with the Burkhart, I mean, we haven't seen that on the A-team in a while. I mean, obviously Monday Night Football decades and decades ago, but not since Buck, Collinsworth, and Aikman a million years ago as well. On the NBA, though, it's always, you know, the big three. You get the three folks in there. And I think there is something a little lackluster feeling about the big game, and it's just two people. I don't know why that is, but you're just so used to seeing the trio there. I do think that, you know, Steve Kerr would be interesting. I mean, the Warriors don't seem to be going anywhere, which is a much bigger problem for the NBA than the broadcasting. Steve Kerr would be available. He was obviously, you want to talk about people who were really good at broadcasting.
Phenomenal.
Who
went back into coaching.
Steve Kerr is better than Doc.
I agree. By infinitely better. Not even close, quite frankly.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he was the lead, not just on the NBA, he was the lead on the NCAA tournament. People forget that with Nance and I guess
great.
Clark Kelly.
The thing about great about Kerr is Kerr was great with different partners. You know, like you said, whether it was on the NCAA tournament or with Marv doing all those NBA games. And, you know, I don't know. I clearly Steve made a decision to go back to coaching, and obviously he's been an all-time historic great coach, but he was an absolutely fantastic number one analyst. And I do hope one day, once his coaching career is over, I hope he goes back to it, because I thought he was terrific.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, the Warriors aren't going anywhere. They're getting older, and, you know, I would not be surprised if even after this season, he decided to take a break. I mean, you got to take a break, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even Phil Jackson took a couple of breaks. So that would be someone to look at, I mean, if you really wanted to go out of the box, and of course, I'm not serious, although I do hope it happens. How about Bill Walton? You know, he's still around. Still
would be good, although, yeah, I don't know if I see that. I think the problem with Walton, obviously, who just for younger listeners did do the NBA Finals with Steve Jones, Marv Albert on NBC. I do think he's so removed from the game, John. That might be the big issue. He's just, he hasn't covered the NBA in forever.
Yeah, but you know, hey, I mean, it would be, I wouldn't complain, but you know, that's the nostalgia factor. That's the member berries, right?
Yeah, and very famous, and people would tune in.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, last one. We'll do it quick and I'll get you out of here. Because I'm going to end up doing much more pods on this, and it's a longer topic. But I did have Alex Sherman and Chad Finn on to discuss the WWE Netflix deal. And one of the things we got into, of course, is this going to be a foray for Netflix to ultimately get into what is traditional live sports as opposed to sports entertainment? When you saw that deal, obviously a massive deal for both those companies, did you start to think that maybe 3, 5, 7, 8 years from now, Netflix is going to be a player when it comes to traditional media rights? Or do you see this as just a continuation of Netflix when it comes to sort of an entertainment vehicle, and they're not going to dip their toe in that other water?
Well, when I first read it, I did think that this was the beginning of Netflix entering as a live sports contender, because obviously, I mean, you're paying this much money for WWE Raw. Yeah, it's entertainment, but it's also live programming. So forget what it is. The fact that Netflix is paying this much money for live programming, that was always a question, whether or not Netflix would move into live this way. But, you know, obviously Netflix continues to say, hey, we're not getting into live sports, yada, yada, yada. I don't really know what their opposition is. I mean, if you're into the WWE, you might as well just go and make the leap into live sports as well. F1's rights are coming up after next year. And obviously that would be something to fit. And there's a lot of tiny little sports that have niche fan bases. How about the French Open is coming up?
Yeah. I was just thinking tennis would be so interesting for Netflix if they ever really went big into it. Cause, I don't know if you watch it. I like Breakpoint. I know it's box to box film, so it's sort of different, but I think Netflix has done a great job with tennis in terms of like what they've done with it so far.
Yeah. I haven't seen the Breakpoint show, but I've heard of it. And, again, look, I mean, tennis fans are already so used to having to, you know, scrounge around looking for the games and the matches on Tennis Channel, on Peacock, and certainly the French Open, where, you know, you don't even get the live coverage on your NBC affiliate because it's tape delayed depending on where you are in the country. So that would be a good fit. I mean, I've had some folks have told me on Twitter, I didn't even realize this, but the horse racing, the Derby, the Belmont.
Yeah, that's although coming. I think I, as someone who's a massive fan of that, I actually think NBC has done a great job with that sport. Oh, yeah. I think their Breeders' Cup coverage has been excellent. Derby coverage has been excellent. And but by the way, Fox is now into that. Fox just had the Belmont for the first time.
And let me correct that.
It would be interesting. I don't. Yeah, I know what you're saying about niche sports, but man, I don't know how much money there is in terms of getting into horse.
But if you want to if you want to dip your toe in there, there's opportunity. I do want to correct the Derby and Preakness are coming up. The Belmont, as you said, went to Fox, so that's locked up. But you know, there's a lot of opportunity at the niche sport level if you're afraid to get in and pay the huge amounts of money. There's even the baseball Peacock contract that expired.
Great point.
The Sunday morning game. So if Netflix really wants to get in, there's any number of relatively low risk opportunity for them to do so. And if they don't choose to take advantage of those opportunities, then I guess we'll have to take them at their word.
One thing, and again, this is sort of me being selfish because I'm an Olympic fan and I've covered many of them and I love those sports. Do you like something like track and field?
Yeah.
Think, like if Netflix just was like, you know what, we're buying up all the Diamond League stuff. We're buying up everything that's not the Olympic Games, and we're going to put it on our behind our paywall. Again, it's a niche sport, but would the diehards for that sport – pony up the whatever it is, you know, $9.99 a month to pay for Netflix so they can get every track and field event with the exception of the Olympic Games.
Yeah, if Netflix doesn't do it, somebody ought to. I mean, there's interest there. People care about track and field, and it's the most basic of all the sports. It's just people running, right? You know, I mean, people have been doing this for centuries and centuries and centuries. So to me, if it's not Netflix, the setup for track and field right now is woefully inadequate. NBC gets an event every now and again. NBC half the time doesn't even promote it until like the Monday of. I think it's difficult to keep track of if you're a fan. I mean, it's difficult to keep track of even if you are a media person wanting to tell people where the meets are airing. So track and field, I don't know how they do their rights. I imagine all of these events are negotiated separately. Maybe they need to do what NASCAR did all those years ago and kind of pool them all together.
Yeah, I believe there's just different bodies that own different events. Do you know what I mean? So like, yeah, there. It's not like the Diamond League is going to be selling its rights with the United States Olympic trials. You know what I'm saying? So that's the, you know, this has always been the issue with soccer, right? It's just like there's 10,000 leagues and you can't just get a soccer streaming service, which has everything because, like, you know, NBC has Peacock and ESPN has the Bundesliga. And so that's not, and Paramount Plus has the Champions League. So that's not going to happen. All right, anyway, we're going to get John out of here. John Lewis is the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. Go to his excellent site, essentially indispensable when it comes to sports media, particularly on viewership. You can catch John on Twitter under his handle, I think Paulson_SMW. Am I right about
that?
Okay. Yep. So you can catch John's work on there. And John has a podcast that he does, which you can listen to off the Sports Media Watch website. He's got a podcast every week where he goes very deep into viewership. John, it's always great of you to stop on this podcast. I always appreciate your insight and time, and thank you very much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to John Lewis for his time and insights. He's always great. Head to the archives if you like these kind of conversations. This week, we had ESPN NHL broadcasters Ray Ferraro and Sean McDonough talking about the All-Star Game in hockey broadcasting. They were great. The Athletic Chantel Jennings on women's basketball. CNBC's Alex Sherman and Chad Finn, as I referenced, were on this podcast. We went pretty deep into the Netflix TKO deal. Paul Feinbaum was a guest on this podcast in January. And then if you like behind-the-scenes business stuff, Karen Brodkin and Hillary Mandel of Endeavor, they negotiate a lot of behind-the-scenes deals. And Hubie Brown was on this podcast not too long ago, and that was always a treat for me. Again, if you like this, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. Want to thank Patrick Antonetti for his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.